racing to the first tee, knowing what fun it will be. Soon the starter will call me to the first tee.
Playoff number two in the books, and now we're set for the big finale. Hi, I'm Bob Bupka. Proud to be here with Jay Randolph Jr. this week, especially because we're going to talk U.S. Amateur. His dad played in a lot of U.S. Amateurs, and also he knows Doug Barron very well, the delightful winner on the Champions Tour. What a story that is. And Jay, you know him better as STL Golf Geek on Twitter. You know Jay as STL Golf Geek on Twitter, not Doug Barron. I don't want him stealing that handle. And of course, we'll be talking about who's going to bank that $15 million. But Jay, I'm sure with the U.S. Amateur, especially at Pinehurst, you enjoyed watching that.
Hang on.
It was a great golf weekend. And oddly enough, my dad called me at 5:20 Central Time, and he said, "Are you watching the Champions Tour?" And I said, "I don't watch the Champions Tour." And he told me that Doug Barron was getting ready to win. And I had seen a Facebook post earlier in the week from a friend of mine congratulating Dougie on getting in the Monday qualifying. So you got the excitement, or the maybe the lack of excitement, if you will, but still somebody making a huge statement in Chicago. You had the USAM at Pinehurst, and then what happened with Doug Barron. And, we're talking about the last week, if you will, of a season of golf that we've had. But as we pointed out a couple of weeks ago, we're just a couple of weeks from the new season beginning. In a way, golf never stops, and that's why, you know, for some of us, the playoffs are a little hokey, but there is still golf to be played, and we're going to have the unique situation this week, Bob, of really something that's never, ever happened in the game, where the leaderboard for the Tour Championship was already up Sunday night.
Well, I want to pick your brain on so many things. I don't even know where to start. Perhaps let's start with that U.S. Amateur, because it was conducted at Pinehurst. I was not a big fan, Jay, of it being played on two different golf courses on Sunday.
Here, here.
And I was curious to get your opinion on that.
I didn't understand it. I talked to my buddy Skip Erkmeyer, who did not play very well and missed the 36-hole cut. I didn't realize until I was looking at some of the storylines going into Sunday that they were going to play a golf course that they had not played since earlier in the week. That would be my only thing. That has never happened in the history of the United States Amateur. I don't know that it's going to be a regular thing. I think partly because of all the redo work that they did on number four, that they wanted to give it some love. But that, to me, that and the fact that a lot of, and it's match play, Bob, as you know better than anybody, you can't create the best players in the world in a match play format. You can't just say, okay, we're going to get the first ranked player, the second ranked player, the third ranked player, and the fourth ranked player in the finals. You ended up with four guys that, really three guys that didn't have much of a pedigree per se, and one that was in the top 35 in the world amateur rankings. So a lot of the big names are out, but I thought the difficulty of the golf course, especially in the qualifying, I talked to a couple of people that told me if you didn't carry the ball 250, 260, and I know most of those guys do now, but that's still a pretty darn good carry, that it really made the golf course difficult. And as we saw, kind of the randomness of Pinehurst when you miss it in that pine straw or pine weed, as they now call it, you can either have a perfect lie or have nothing. So all in all, I thought the championship was great. I thought the 36-hole final in the end with one player not having the lead for 34 holes or 32 holes or whatever it was and finally getting the lead and being able to hold on was very good. I thought it was a really good thing for Pinehurst, but as you said, surprised by the fact that they used number four.
Well, I agree with you there, Jay. Probably a one-off on using two golf courses. All right, let's go back to the big one, the BMW Championship or playoff number two. It was all about positioning, and certainly Thomas put on a show that that's pretty hard to beat. I know Medina was a little soft with the early rain in the week, the lack of wind, but I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that Normandy would have been a better test than Medina.
Bob, it's absurd, to be honest with you. In 1975, Lou Gramm won the U.S. Open at Medina. And granted, I know it's the U.S. Open, and it's different, and the setup is different, but Lou Gramm shot three over. Thomas shot 25 under. They had talked. You remember we heard earlier last week on our show, we heard guys talking about the rough. Rough does not matter anymore. Not with the equipment. Not with the golf ball. This is a different game than you or myself ever played. Even when we thought we were playing good golf, it's just a whole different thing. It's fine. But you can't tell me that something doesn't need to be done when somebody shoots 61 at Medina. I mean, come on.
Well, you're right about that, Jay. I was so happy to hear Adam Scott. He's really on to something. He said, you know, making it longer, that's not going to make it tougher.
Nope.
You know, they got to make it shorter. They got to make it trickier. You got to execute shots where, you know, if it's not good, you pay the price. And I don't know if we're ever going to see that again. And I have blamed the Masters, believe it or not, as the main culprit when, you know, they fell in love with the back nine on Sunday and the amount of birdies and eagles that they want to show on television. And it seems like all the governing bodies now, Jay, are kind of falling in line with that philosophy.
But, I mean, the U.S. Amateur was contested at 73, almost 7,400 yards. And there were three par fours that were over 500. Par fours that were over 500. I saw a kid from 211 hit 8-iron. I mean, it's just, it's off the charts. I mean, it's not worth getting upset about for me because it's just so different. I mean, I can only imagine when Bob Jones started seeing Jack Nicklaus hitting 7-iron 165 or 170. I mean, this is just, it's all changed. And people like you and I have to, you know, we've got to understand that, and it's the ball. Because we've seen the USGA try to trick it up, and we don't like that. We don't like to make it goofy. They're going to have to regulate the golf ball if they want to have any semblance of golf being in relation to par anymore. You know, it's just the way it is. And the other thing is, each week you're going to have one, two, three, four, five guys that are going to be on their game. And they're going to shoot four or five under every day. It's just, it's fascinating. And JT basically won this golf tournament in round three with that 61. Cantlay tried to mess with them a little bit in the final round, and there were a couple other guys trying to make some noise. But this was huge for JT. It hasn't been the best of years for him. It hasn't been the year that he wanted. And now he has a giant opportunity to add to the $10 million cushion he won in 2017, to add $15 million to it. This was the guy that said, yeah, it's a nice cushion.
I'd love to sit on that couch one day.
How'd you like to win in the last two years, a $10 million bonus and a $15 million bonus. Sam Snead is up there shaking his head and saying things I'm not allowed to say.
Yeah, you're right about that. Let's give a listen to JT after that victory.
Yeah, I couldn't get the ball in the fairway. And if I'm not able to do that, then it's hard to have the scoring opportunities. And it was windy, so that made it even worse. But I stayed patient. I was really nervous going in today. It had been a while, and out on the golf course, it was fun. I remembered that it's really hard to win a golf tournament, and I'm glad that I was able to do so.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. That's his 10th career victory. in 136 starts. So he's going along rather nicely. He's only 26 years old. When you think about it, Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia, they both have 10 wins and one major, same as JT. Of course, those guys are, you know, about 10 years older than Thomas. So the future certainly looks bright for him. The ninth player in tour history to record 10 wins, including a major, before the age of 27. Now let's talk about some notables that didn't make it into the top 30. Shane Lowry, he gets a pass. He's still celebrating. I would think that, you know, certainly Jordan Spieth's got to be disappointed. Second year in a row, he's not going to be in the Tour Championship. Tiger Woods, defending champion, he's not going to be in the Tour Championship. Interesting fact that I came across, Jay, if they were to use the format that they're using this year, last year, Tiger Woods would not have won, Tour Championship. Tournament. I mean, that's pretty amazing stuff.
Well, here's my thought on Tiger. What I appreciated was, you know, when he left us on Friday at Liberty National, I think a lot of us had in our mind, uh-oh, whoa, where are we headed? What are the next couple of months going to be like? But he got to Chicago, got his bearings, played four rounds, obviously didn't play the way he wanted to try and make it. But I thought in a way it was a little bit of an accomplishment. It at least showed that there is still life. Where we go with that life and when he plays next and if he tries to. I mean, I cannot see him, Bob, picking himself for the President's Cup team if he doesn't play in another golf tournament. So when's he going to play? The President's Cup is the week after his event down in the Bahamas. Spieth is just going to continue to be. You know, JT, you could say, was having a little bit of a slump, but now getting back into the winner's circle. Spieth has been trying to find it and hasn't found it. And, you know, with all the first-time winners this year and all the quality first-time winners that we seemingly talked about, Bob, the only rookie to make it to the Tour Championship is Sung J.M., and he's kind of gotten lost in the mix of some of these young studs that have been playing so well this summer.
Yeah, absolutely. And a little suggestion to the Tiger Woods camp, not that he needs any help from you and I, Jay, but I would highly recommend Tiger teeing it up at Century in Maui, limited field, no cut, great chance to get just one step closer to that record of Sam Snead. Whether he'll capitalize on that opportunity, of course, he gets to go there virtually the Masters victory. We'll have to wait and see. Yep. But
We felt like he should have done it last year. Maybe he'll learn to do it this year.
Yeah, maybe he will. Let's give a listen though to Tiger on the President's Cup team selection.
It's going to come down to the top eight guys, myself and my vice captains, but who are the next four slots? And whether that's me and three other guys, or it's just four other guys. Either way, I'm going to Australia. Just whether or not I'm going to be playing or not.
Well, the question is, Jay, if he wants to play, he's going to play. I mean, it's not going to be a question of whether his vice captains make a decision or even the team making a decision. If he wants to play, he'll be playing. And personally, I don't think he will play.
I don't either. Not unless he, you know, plays a couple of times in the fall and shows some success. I it's hard for me to believe that he would not play. I think it's November 4th, maybe, that the final picks are made. I just can't see him picking himself if he's not going to play a tournament until his off-season event, if you will, down in the Bahamas. But maybe that's okay. Mickelson had made a ton of teams in a row. He's not playing. We do need to start to see some of these younger guys get opportunities and see what they do. And he's going to have the first three picks, I think, are pretty pretty easy for him. But that fourth pick, I mean, if he does play a little bit, heck, maybe he will take himself. I don't know. I mean, I don't understand any of it anymore half the time. When we're getting ready to talk about something, I'm still not sure about the fact that Justin Thomas is sitting at 10 under par and we haven't even hit a golf ball in Atlanta.
Well, he's going to be sleeping on a two-shot lead for about 4 days before he tees it up in a tournament. So I'm going to have to start listening to other golf shows so that I can understand what's going on, because I'm really confused on this one. He's already 10 under par, and a tournament starts Thursday. Now, try and tell that to somebody that's not actively involved in following golf, and you'd spend the rest of your life, and they still wouldn't understand it. Of course, Cantlay starts two back at 8 under, Koepka 7 under, 3 back, Reed 4 back, Rory starts 5 back. You know, it's new, it's different. I'm confused, but let's see what Justin Thomas thinks about it.
I know that I'm in a lot better position starting at 10 under than I was at 3 or something like that. I probably was at the start of the week, or 4, but yeah, it's going to be different. I know that, but there's so many variables and questions I have. And if I birdie the first hole, what am I at? I don't know. Do I shoot a score? Do I not? Whatever. So no, I'm going to try not to look at the leaderboards for the first couple of days and just try to shoot as low as I can, 18 holes.
Now, if I didn't hear that and I heard it before we played it for our listeners, I would say, man, I got this, you know, somebody's got to be smoking something in this building I'm in, because when the guy that won last week has to ask the question, what am I if I birdie the first hole? You know, well, you're going to be 11 under par. He's going to say, that'd be the greatest birdie you ever made. He's going to go from to 11 under par in one hole. Pretty amazing stuff.
I mean, the old adage is always there. Go out, play your best, post the score, see where you are. Well, you know, here it's different. It's not like if a team wins 14 games in the NFL season and they play a team that won 12 in the postseason, that they start with a field goal or a touchdown lead. We all know what they're trying to do. Nobody knows better than you and I, because we were there before they even announced it, and the tour came to us and talked to us about what they were trying to do to try and get some feedback. And I think we all knew, and as I said earlier, and we'll talk about when we talk about the USAM, you can't just say, okay, we've got Woods and we got Thomas and Koepka and Rory all tied for the lead going into the final round. You have to make things happen. It will be interesting to see. I mean, Rory is playing as good as anybody right now. So is John Rahm. But Rory starts the golf tournament 5 shots back. He's got to make up 5 shots. You say he's got to make up 5 shots over the course of 4 days, but you don't know what Thomas is going to shoot the first round. You don't know what Cantlay is going to shoot the first round. I mean, this is all new to us, Bob. But somebody asked me today, who's the dark horse that you like at the Tour Championship? And I said, well, this is kind of weird, but I'm going to call Rory a dark horse because he's 5 back. I mean, how could you not be a dark horse if you start a tournament 5 shots behind a guy? So this is going to be a learning experience for us as viewers. It's going to be a learning experience for the tour administrating the championship and seeing how it goes. And most importantly, it's going to be a learning experience for these guys that are starting leading or, you know, behind. And, you know, Cantlay's the closest at 8 under par.
Yeah, but the amazing thing is, Jay Randolph Jr., as long as we've both been covering golf, we're going to witness a golf tournament where somebody shoots the lowest score for 72 holes in the tournament and not win. I mean, that's what I can't wrap my head around.
No, you're dead on, and almost in a sense, you think that maybe they might have been smart enough to split some of this dough and somehow create a secondary tournament, because you're right. I mean, let's say Sung J.M., shoots 466s, and Thomas shoots 469s, that still may not be enough to, you know, it may not be, it's not enough to get there. So it's just kind of, it's kind of unique. I hope we, I hope that at least for the viewers and for us that watch the game, that you can put a bow tie on the end of the season, even though it's not the end of the calendar year and they're going to start in 2 weeks. Maybe we could have some drama at the Tour Championship, but it all seems a little forced.
We'll be back right after we take a brief timeout.
We'll also talk about the U.S. Amateur after this break. You're listening to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay, heard on KTRS, the Big 550 in St. Louis, the Armed Forces Radio Network, iTunes, Audio Boom, Spreaker, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or you can just ask your smart speaker Alexa, and you'll be connected.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
Welcome back to In the Grill Room with Bob and Jay. Great to have you with us. The final week of the PGA Tour season. The whole thing comes down to this week. You can find me on Twitter, STL Golf Geek, and you certainly can find Mr. Bubka, Bob Bubka, VOG. That VOG stands for the Voice of Golf. And while we talked a little bit about our initial thoughts on the U.S. Amateur, it was quite an event, considered the major of amateur golf. Jack Nicklaus still considers it a major championship. He says, he didn't win 18 majors. He won 20 because he counts as two USAMs. And I didn't realize how close Jack was to doing what Tiger did and winning three consecutive AMs in 59, 60, and 61. They chronicled what happened in 1960 on the broadcast this weekend. So it is a huge championship. And while, Bob, we may not have had the four best amateurs in the world, we had kids fighting all week, and it is a kids' event. The average age now is 22 of the contestants at the U.S. Amateur. The final was set up between Andy Ogletree trying to join Matt Kuchar and Bobby Jones as U.S. Amateurs who've attended Georgia Tech. And an All-American at Vanderbilt, getting ready to be a senior, and the only guy that was in the top 50 in the world amateur rankings, John Augustine. And It looked like it was going to be all Augustine.
Well, to start out with, Augustine won four of the first five holes to go four up. One interesting thing about Ogletree, he's from a very small town in Mississippi, population somewhere around 2,000.
And you and I got a friend from there.
And who would that be?
That would be the little pro, Eddie Marins.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that. You got me on that. I bet I get you on this. He's the first player from Mississippi to ever play at Georgia Tech.
Well, that I wouldn't have thought either. So we're teaching you some stuff today on In the Grill Room. But Ogletree finally, he just hung around. He hung around. And then when the opportunity was there, Bobby took the lead and he never looked back. He won on the 35th hole. And, oh, the perks, here they come. And I hate how we have to say this, but he's expected to get the invite to the Masters. He's going to the Masters. He is in the U.S. Open, the Open Championship, as long as they, you know, as long as these players remain amateurs. Both make the Walker Cup team. The former U.S. amateur champion and friend of In the Grill Room, Nathaniel Crosby, is going to be the U.S. captain for the Walker Cup team. Life-changing experience for Ogletree and for Augustine as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And It's going to be interesting. Ogletree, as you said, certainly will get an invite to the Masters, but they never want to commit ahead of time until the invitation is extended. But he will be teeing it up the first 2 days with Tiger Woods. So it's pretty heady stuff when you're playing in your first Masters and you're playing alongside five-time winner Tiger Woods. Just goes to show you the magnitude of winning the United States Amateur. And I bet if we had your dad on the show and he played in, I believe, five U.S. Amateurs, he would say some of the fondest memories of his golfing career had to be playing in the USAM.
Well, and his most fond was when he had already been eliminated in 1954 at the Country Club in Detroit, or Detroit Country Club, when he witnessed Arnold, a life-changing experience for the King, Arnold Palmer. As you know, Arnold credits the win at the U.S. Amateur with giving him the opportunity and the fortitude to go forward with professional golf. It was somewhat of a vagabond life at that time. Some of them called them gypsies. They traveled four to a car. But that win in 54, and Senior stayed to watch Arnold win, and said that he could tell that Arnold changed on that day. I think, you know, that's the one regret I have, is that I got a lot of great regrets. Let me take that back. But the one golf regret I got is not qualifying for a U.S. Amateur, because it is so special. It is our national championship at amateur, is an amateur. And, you know, now there's, you know, the Sonny Hanna. They got 8 million different tournaments across the country. But this is the one everybody still wants to play in.
Well, you came awfully close, my friend. You can always be proud of that. And that saying that you came up with, four to a car, you left out the following phrase, belly to the bar. That's what...
you ain't lying. It was quite a bit different than the way these cats act today. There were not any workout gurus traveling with them, or head doctors, or they went to talk to Jim Beam.
That's for sure. They're pretty good friends. Well, speaking of good friends, somebody that you know personally, and one of the real good feel-good stories in professional golf took place upstate New York at the PGA Tour Champions, the Dick's Sporting Goods Open. Certainly a very unlikely winner, but one that certainly brought a smile to your face, my face, and that is Doug Barron.
I mean, this is off the charts. You know, this is, I remember my friend Tom Wargo from Centralia, Illinois, when he qualified for the 93 PGA Senior Championship by virtue of his finish at their club professional championship. He was exempt into there. He did not have status on the Champions Tour. What did he do? He went out at PGA National and won the golf tournament, changed his life. Doug Barron is the ups and downs of a guy. Suspended on tour for supposedly performance PEDs. I don't believe that myself. I think it was a miscue. He soared the tour and won. He Monday qualified for the British Senior. He qualified for the Senior Open. He Monday qualified here. I'm sitting on Facebook last week, and one of my golf geek friends congratulates Doug Barron on getting in the championship. And I just thought, well, that's great for Doug. You know, he's just kind of playing along and, you know, finishing things out. I didn't see this coming. $305,000, the first ever wire to wire Monday qualifier winner in PGA Tour Champions history. And Bob, this is a good old guy. This is a nuts and bolts kind of guy. Have a beer with you. Got that Southern Memphis attitude. And I'm so happy for Dougie Barron. This is great for him, as I always like to say. And this proved it to me, because I've been, you know, anybody that listens to our show knows that I've kind of lost some of the interest in the Champions Tour, but this proved to me again that golf's greatest mulligan is the Champions Tour.
And what a scene it was when he pulled up to his house the other day. About 200 of his friends and family surprised him waiting as he came down the street. It was quite a scene, and certainly well-deserved. Well, we have to end the show, Jay, this week on a sad note. Legendary, and I mean legendary, Jack Whitaker passed away. Your dad, I know, knew him very well. Jack was a giant in the industry, and you know he set the bar pretty high for anybody that wanted to go into broadcasting.
Extremely unique broadcaster, not necessarily the finest play-by-play guy, but a guy that could be put in any situation. You could put him by the finish line, like he was in 73 when Secretariat destroyed the Belmont. You could put him at the Masters. He had a great way, or those all those years covering major championship golf for ABC. He had a way of speaking almost like a writer, but being able to still come across in a quality fashion on television, where so many of the writers aren't able to make that step. He could. A very bright man, a very kind man, a long career, respected just by just about everybody who ever came in contact with him. And, you know, another one of the last. From a different era, from a bygone era than what we have today. And we harp on that a little bit on the show because Bob and I love the history of sports and golf and media and things of that nature. So, you know, 95 years, a hell of a run for the great Jack Whitaker.
Yeah, well said, Jay. He was a longtime member of Shinnecock, loved playing out there. A little candy kitchen in a small town of Bridgehampton was one of his favorite hangouts. If Bridgehampton sounds familiar, that's the town that Carl Yastrzemski grew up in. So the Grill Room sends condolences to his family. He was a class act, to be sure.
Right now, it's time to learn a little bit more about my place, Normandy Golf Club, the oldest public course west of the Mississippi, and where I am just about every day. And when we come back, it'll be time to hear Bob's conversation with Adam Shupak, one of the fine author and journalist. He was at the U.S. Amateur. They'll talk U.S. Amateur next.
Situated in central St. Louis resides the oldest public golf course west of the Mississippi, Normandy Golf Club. Opened in 1901 and designed by the renowned Fowlis Brothers of Scotland, this old gem has played host to Babe Ruth, Mickey Rooney, and the great Babe Zaharias. History lives and breathes at The Rock, as Normandy is affectionately known. A mixture of long and short holes in a tree-lined atmosphere challenge golfers of all skill levels. In 2015, a renewed commitment was made to this unique property under the direction of Walters Golf Management. Affordable rates and top-notch service is what you'll find at Normandy Golf Club. If your travels bring you to St. Louis, make sure to make a tee time at The Rock. To learn more, check out normandygolf.com and enjoy old-school golf at its finest.
You haven't heard his voice here before, but it's a very knowledgeable voice, and it belongs to Adam Shupak. He wrote the book, Dean Beeman, Golf's Driving Force, and we had the pleasure of noting that he was at the United States Amateur last week, held down in Pinehurst. Adam, let me begin by my observation. Watching it on TV, I just kept saying over and over, I don't know if there's a better venue for the United States Amateur than Pinehurst. It just, to me, it just all seemed to fit so nicely.
I love when they have any big event there. I think it's a great site for the U.S. Open back in 2014. I spent 2 weeks there for the men's and the women's back to back. I thought that, you know, that was unique. And just the Village of Pinehurst, it just oozes golf. I mean, everyone who's there loves golf. They're golf geeks and you know, there's so many golf courses to be played there. And you go to a tavern after and you just talk about golf and everybody's played that day. And what they did this year, having the using number four for the first round of the final 36-hole match, and then number two for the second round, which usually they just play one course both day, you know, both rounds. I thought that was a nice addition, and really was a great opportunity to highlight number four, which was redone not too long ago by Gil Hance, and I had a chance to play it the Monday after, and just really a top-notch golf course. Always was a good golf course, but really did a great job of making it in the same, bringing back some of the Donald Ross style to it, and I think it was just a tremendous week. Maybe a little hot, but other than that, Pinehurst just a special place for golf.
Well, I'm glad to get your perspective on the two courses. I really wasn't thrilled when I heard that was going to be the format, but the way you explain it certainly makes a lot of sense. All right, let's go to that championship match. I mean, it starts out, Ogletree goes four down after five holes. What were your thoughts at that juncture?
Yeah, I mean, everybody kind of felt like John Augenstein was the favorite rising senior at Vanderbilt, had a little bit of a better ranking and was a match play maestro, 17-3-1 going back to the spring season in 2017 when he's played match play contests. So this is a guy very comfortable in the format and playing some tremendous golf all week. And I was really impressed with how Andy Ogletree from Georgia Tech was able to, you know, he even said it in the press conference afterwards that people say he must have a negative blood pressure because he's so calm and collected out there. Nothing seemed to get to him. And even though he was down early, he fought back. I think it was critical that he made a birdie at 18 to make it just two down going into the break. And then also won the very first hole to start the second 18 with a nice birdie at the first. And so he was one down, and it took a long time. He didn't even tie the match till the 31st hole. But once he did, he really was a tough guy to beat. And it was a really, you know, thrilling match. I mean, I guess there was the BMW was going on at pretty much at the same time. And maybe some people were interested in that, but to me, watching these guys battle it out, a couple, you know, amateurs that are still playing the game for the love of it and opportunity to get exemptions into, you know, the Masters, US Open, British Open, depending how far these guys go, Walker Cup, bids were also on the line. There's just a great Sunday drama that didn't get much better than this match.
You know, Adam, one thing to me tied the two events, together, Medina, obviously with the rain earlier in the week and the lack of wind, basically was defenseless, 25 under par winning. The cry came out, shortly after the completion of that BMW championship that, you know, something has to be done about these golf courses. And the overwhelming response has been that adding length is not the solution to making these golf courses tougher. And I couldn't help but think of Pinehurst. I mean, you take the formula that Donald Ross used at Pinehurst, and, you know, the course is as tough as you could ever want it to be. And maybe they, even though that's from way back when, that's going to be the wave of the future.
Pinehurst, you know, had the Cora Crenshaw came in 2010 and did some work. And it's not short anymore. It's, I think, 7,500 yards. But, these guys, the ball just really runs out there. I think fast and firm conditions, you know, it's hard to always guarantee that, but that seems to be one of the more challenging aspects for these pros. They also don't like the thin lies. They're better at playing out of bunkers and the rough around the green than when you have these collection areas. And also the Donald Ross was a genius and his saucer cup greens, you know, basically repel any bad shot. And, you know, one of the great lines I always remember from being there as a caddy saying to me, you never clap until the ball is stopped, because a lot of times those balls, it looks like it's going to be a good shot, and next thing you know, it'll run off the green and into a bunker. And plenty of times I saw those type of things happen during the U.S. Amateur, and it's just so hard to battle back from that.
Hey, thanks for the update from the United States Amateur, certainly one of the premier golf events on the planet.
Well, now you're up to date on what's going on around the world of golf. That's it for this week.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.